Gang, are you a fan of podcasts and Law & Order SVU? Well, I have the show for you. The seminal SVU podcast, Munch My Benson, is the twisted love child of co-hosts Adam Schwitters and Josh Dugan, celebrating the splendid and often wildly inappropriate lunacy found only on Law & Order SVU. Each week, Adam and Josh walk you through a random episode of SVU, all while sharing their smart and hilarious insight. Find Munch My Benson wherever it is you stream podcasts or go to munchmybenson.com for more info. That's Munch My Benson. Let's get down. Attention, Austin guitarists. Are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the best job, he's also got the best prices and the fastest service in town. That's J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Gang, whether it's acoustic, electric, or bass, Jason Swedberg is your guy. Find him at J. Scott Luthery. Get your guitars fixed, and let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Howdy.
Alright, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys are all doing good. I haven't checked in with an intro for a while because these American race relations shows that I've been putting out have just been straight up conversations. I don't try and contextualize it with an intro. I don't put ads on them. They're just the raw conversation of black people telling me about their experiences here in America and things that they would like to see changed. It's been very positive. I've gotten a lot of great response. I want to thank everyone for listening. The numbers have been great on those shows. And yeah, they've been really important. I've got a lot more coming, a lot more. I don't know if you guys live in Austin, you've been reading all the stuff that's been going on with Jackie Venson and sort of the risks that she took standing up to this system and the payoff that it's gotten. Look it up, baby. Jackie Venson, she'll be talking to us on the show on Friday. So yeah, it's been a very intense couple of weeks for me, both personally and, you know, learning and having these intense conversations and really having my eyes open to a lot of things I didn't see before. Go check them out. Great conversations are available now with Tamika Soretti, Brannon Temple, Bevis Griffin, Jonathan Horstman, and the gentleman that brought me into having these talks and told me that it would be a good idea if I started doing them, Mr. James Robinson. You can check them out. They've been happening for the last couple of weeks. Anyway, I have a great show for you guys today. Water Tower is a band from Los Angeles. They're like a bluegrass country band that is also like influenced by punk and all kinds of music. I'm joined by Kenny Feinstein from the band. And also there's a member of the band called Tommy Dunkard who makes some special appearances on our conversation. Anyway, Kenny has a great story, man. And they just made this record that he's been making for a long time while he got his life together and he got sober. And sort of like changed his life, left Portland, moved to LA, hooked up with the drummer from the Germs, Don Bowles, who produced this amazing record, Fly Around. It's got a lot of energy. It's raw. It's in your face. The dude comes from like the busking world. He loves playing on the streets, on a street corner every day. In fact, he's doing that online right now, on an online street corner. Free concerts every day on Water Tower's Facebook page at noon. Free concerts every day on Water Tower's Twitch channel at 5 p.m. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with this incredibly cool dude, just like a really sweet dude with a great outlook on life. And as I said, this was done 3 weeks ago before all of this intensity started coming down. I hope Kenny's doing all right. I haven't talked to him since this conversation. Anyway, enjoy my conversation with Kenny Feinstein and also a little bit of Tommy Dunkard from the Los Angeles band Water Tower. Let's get down.
Thank you.
When are they going to work that into it? I think you just did. I'm going to start. You mind if I use that? Czech Republic?
Go for it, man. I'm honored. Check the mic, Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia.
How you doing, Kenny?
I'm wonderful, man. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Yeah, great to be with you too, man. How are you doing under this quarantine? How have you fared under this over the last couple of months?
Oh, dude, you know, I'm glad you asked. This quarantine has totally changed my life in a good way.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and the band's life, you know, we're here at band headquarters right now. And the other two band members, one of them got stuck. He was supposed to be here a month and a half ago. His flight was canceled due to COVID. So he's stuck at his parents in Connecticut, and he'll be back this next week, finally. So that's exciting. And then the other band member sleeping right now, just cause we had a late night last night. But yeah, so we have band headquarters, and since we've been quarantined here as a band, and it's made it so we could really build something different online that we weren't doing before, because we were playing outside before.
That's really interesting, because you obviously spent a long time making this great record, by the way, Fly Around.
Thank you so much.
Hell yeah, it's got so much vibe. Like, and the thing is like, you know, when I read this stuff, I was expecting something, and then you sent me the record, and I was listening. I was just like, this isn't like a bluegrass band, like by any means. There's like this weird, almost like a Brian Eno noise thing with that Mile High Club song. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah,
ticked. But it's amazing and it's great. And there's something about the recording and the way the drums sound. It's all so like raw. And then I saw that is his name Dan Bowles?
Don Bowles, yeah, the drummer of the Germs.
Don Bowles, yeah. from the drummer of the Germs. He did it. So there's, I mean, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here, and I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, it took 7 years to do. I started in Portland. My vision was initially, I'd always known Don for what he did, and I'd read his book about being in the Germs, and I just loved their band so much. And I knew he wasn't super familiar with bluegrass or Americana. I figured maybe you'd heard the word, but I called him the first time. We had talked a few times on Facebook, and I was like, I have this vision of you producing my songs and playing drums on it, and we're a bluegrass band. And he was like, what? Why would I do that? And he's like, I don't even play bluegrass. And I was like, and so anyway, I flew him up to Portland. And we started recording there, and the raw drum sound, it was like cardboard box drums we were basically playing on.
Oh.
But, you know, no, they weren't cardboard boxes, they were real, but that was like the sound like we were trying to go for, that he had this part of his vision. So he just sort of trusted me and took a leap of faith, because I was like, please just trust me and I'll give you some money. And so he came on up, and that was 7 years ago, and we finished it over this last 7 years here in Los Angeles at Nightbird Studios. And, you know, Ariel Pink came into the mix, and it's just been a crazy story, because the album ended up saving my life. It's the reason I'm still alive. Like the vision of the album was my hope. And, you know, I ended up stopping drinking and doing drugs throughout the whole thing. And that was kind of like what the whole story, it's like a concept album. It's circular. It's like the first part's me in Portland needing to leave. And then that Mile High Club, the Brian Eno, is me on the plane coming over here to LA. And that was sort of Don was like, you need to come to LA so you can save yourself, man, and finish this record.
What was going on? I mean, you were drinking a lot. Were you doing drugs? And
yeah, I mean, I had just dealt with just being in the music industry, I guess, you know, just my whole life. I started playing music seriously at 14 in Mexico City, playing the bands out there. And, in punk bands, a band called the Wong Dudes was my first sort of serious band. And it's just alcohol and drugs were always part of extracurricular, right? And so it seemed accepted for so many years. And I didn't realize it just wasn't normal. And then all of a sudden, I didn't know. To me, it seemed normal, you know? And so everyone around me just were dropping like flies for years. And all of a sudden, I was alone. And you know, completely isolated from everyone. And it was where I needed to be in order to realize that something was wrong and it was my fault, you know?
So there was no like terrible, like OD or something where you hit bottom. You hit bottom because you were alone and you realized that you were on the wrong path.
There were a lot of bottoms, like what I would say, like what you're speaking of. And it's a miracle I'm alive. I would say that, But my heart definitely stopped. But it, for some reason, it came back a couple times. I was one of those guys that just had to have a lot of really low times in order to figure out if there was something wrong. You know, it was basically a huge spiritual bankruptcy that had accumulated over years and years and years. It wasn't one thing. It was just there were so many bad things. Sure. You're like, well, that should have been it, man, but not for me.
Yeah, sometimes the bottom is just the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, congratulations, man.
Thank you. Thank you, man. I'm so grateful to be here talking to you about it. It's just so cool.
You wanted to be you got sober because you wanted to see this album through and you didn't think you were going to make it. That's what I'm getting from what you're saying.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, the I didn't really care about making it. Honestly, I had lived my dream already. My dream was to have a band, have success, tour the world, play music with my friends and make a living off of it. And so by age 22, 23, we'd already toured the world a couple of times. And I was like, well, I thought I had found my calling, which was not music anymore. You know, it was the other stuff. And so through going really low over the years, I think of that spiritual bankrupt feeling, that is what just guided me to, you know, and being completely isolated. I was just at that point where, all I could see was this vision of the record. And I knew that I had promised my family and my friends that the record was coming. And a lot of people had paid for the record in advance through an Indiegogo campaign. So I have this feeling like I owed these people this record.
Yeah.
And I finally, day before yesterday, I finally fulfilled every last person who had bought the record in 2014 from an Indiegogo campaign. So there was that feeling of I owed this to the people. It wasn't about me. It was about them.
Did you get into a program or something? Like a 12-step program or did you?
Yeah. I mean, I do that. I do things like that. I've tried to do so many different things. Yeah. Programs, what the jails, institutions and death. I tried all of those things. Numerous times.
I'm glad you chose the alternative.
Dude, I'm just so happy. Every day I wake up and we play at least twice a day live. We do 12 and 5.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then we have other shows that we do. And so every day I get to wake up and hang out with 100 of my best friends online and play music. And it's kind of like taking their temperature the whole time because I watch we're watching the comments to see what they want to do. And we're always having the conversations. And the weird thing, dude, is that for the last 8 years, 9 years. I mean, well, 15 years. We started as a busking band. You know what busking is?
Of course.
And that's how we met Vanessa, who connected us. And so we were busking in Portland, and I'll shoot you a video of this. Professionally, we did this as a living, and it started raining half the year, right? That's Portland. So we need to come to LA, the promised land of busking. So we came down here about 5 years ago to finish the record, to save my life, and to busk. Because I didn't want a job. I never wanted a job. I only wanted to play music. So what we were doing was 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and doing that for about the last 5 years out here. And when Corona hit, it finally was the man who said, you have to stop. Because the cops have tried many times to stop me. They really have. And all the cops know me now, and I have a relationship with all of them. So eventually they just stopped. They're like, okay, hey, it's Kenny. This is what he does. You know. And I paid a lot of tickets and all that stuff. But they're like, he's not going anywhere. This is the first time I had to go somewhere. So we came inside about 2.5 months ago because we were forced to, and it brought the whole thing online because I need to play every day, all day. That's what I do. I bring music to people one at a time. And now we get to do it on Facebook because COVID took us off the street.
Yeah. So that's good, man. Normally, I was thinking coming into it that I was going to be talking to someone who was like, yeah, man, I worked 7 years on this album. Finally, I'm about to put it out. We had all this tour booked because it looks like you had a tour booked and you were planning on spending 2020 on the road just talking about Fly Around.
Exactly, dude.
Just bringing the music to the people. But now you can. So it's great to see someone that's accepting this in a way. You mentioned that that you guys know Frank Turner.
Oh man, yeah, Frank. Yeah, I love Frank, and he was on your show, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got to spend a nice afternoon with him. That's all. I mean, I don't do it. Sometimes people come on the show, and I feel like they're too famous to stay friends with after the thing. Even though I thought he and I had a great connection, and I went to his in-store with him, and I went to a show, and I was with him during the day, you know, between soundcheck and the show, watch the soundcheck. Uh-huh. But yeah, he's a really intense dude, and kind of comes from the same sort of like taking the ethos of punk and all of that stuff, and putting it into a traditional style of music, less voluminous style of music, but still with the same intensity. Because that guy's as intense as the Germs in 1980. You know what I mean?
By himself.
Yeah, by himself. Totally. And with an acoustic guitar, singing his songs, putting his shit out. So, so you guys met him on the, you opened for him? Or?
Well, yeah, a couple of cool stories with Frank. Known him for a long time now, and he's like a big brother to me, and he showed me the ropes. And he's not too famous to be friends with, because he's that cool. He has his email on his website for anyone to email him. And there's he's like, hey, look, only email if this, this, and this, but here's my email. And he will respond to you. And he's such a humble, down to earth guy. And he's taught me so much about it. But yeah, we got to, we met him on the revival tour that Chuck Reagan put together with Hot Water Music. And that's how we also met Laura Jean Grace from Against Me and stuff first time. And then, yeah, just throughout the years, you know how it was really cool was in England, we were coming out to play he was off tour, you know, cause his life is booked 18 months in advance at all times. That's what he told me. And, but we went out to England, played the Old Queen's Head in Islington, and texting him like, hey dude, you should come out. This is like 2010 and at 11. And he's like, yeah. And he tweeted about the show and it instantly sold out. It was so cool.
Awesome.
It was such a, and he came to the show and he got like, dude, got up on stage, passed him the guitar. We did Long Black Veil, the Johnny Cash. And I think there's somewhere on YouTube, but after that, he just always like took care of us. Whenever he came to Eugene, Oregon in 2011, in the next year, he let us open for him, his first time playing Eugene or second time playing Eugene. And I don't know, just really cool stuff. Talked to him a few months ago. He's studying some Doc Watson guitar, who's my big hero. So we were talking about how to get those licks. He's just a down to earth, awesome dude.
Yeah. Yeah. And what an amazing connection he has with his fans, because I remember going to the in-store with him. And then we went back to the gig. He did his sound check. We sat down and did the interview backstage. And I lived down the street from the venue, so I had a couple hours to kill between sound check and when he played. So I came home. When I was walking out, there was a fucking line, dude, of people, because it was general admission. They had their tickets. Oh, wait, your video just went out.
Someone called. I just declining them.
They were there waiting. Mm-hmm. Just waiting to make sure that they got a good seat, that they might have a chance to meet him. And so I sat down and talked with this group of girls that had driven here from like Dallas or something. They'd seen him the day before. Like it was awesome. It was awesome.
Wow.
Anyway, that's enough.
Wow. And wait, so where are you in town? Yeah.
I'm in Austin.
Easy to talk about Frank all day. You're in Austin. Okay, yeah. Cool.
You guys play here?
Yeah, we love playing Austin. We went through not too long ago, I think about 8 months ago, and played there. We love to come through South by Southwest. See, we're a busking band, so we come for South by, and we go to that footbridge over the river, and we just busk.
Yeah.
Like, so we just love to be where the people are playing music for them. Got to do that all around the world. Over the one of my favorite busking memories was by the Louvre in Paris over the Seine River, and that's where I wrote Fromage, that first song on our new record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of how the record starts. It's just like, we're in France and I'm watching my friends fall apart due to addiction before my addiction had come in. That's kind of, that song is like the precursor to me seeing what was going to happen. And so that's why it starts the record. Cause we had recorded on an old record under our old name, Watertower Bucket Boys. We kicked the bucket now. So,
all right. So, let's go back. Where are you from? Where were you born?
I was born in San Jose, California, but you know, I grew up most of my life in Singapore, first to seventh grade, and then Mexico City, eighth, ninth, and 10th grade. And then I came to Oregon. So
what
made like a wee.
What did your parents do?
My dad worked for a centrifugal pump company, and my mom was a teacher, and now they're both studying. They're up in Santa Cruz. Where I'm from, home is Santa Cruz for me, because that's where all my extended family's from. Mm-hmm. So we just traveled around my whole life, but every summer came back to Santa Cruz, California. So I'm a Santa Cruz kid who grew up like a little jungle boy in Mexico.
That's awesome. I grew up like that. I lived in Mexico in the jungles when I was like, from the time I was like three till I was like seven.
What part were you in Mexico?
We were in the state of Veracruz, but like inland in the rainforest area.
Oh my gosh. Do you have any memories from back then?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, totally do.
Like what's your favorite memory from back then?
Well, we lived in this hotel on the property of this hotel in this town called Fortín de las Flores. And there was this dude that was like the night watchman. His name was Don Gonzalo. And I wake up, Don Gonzalo, and I wake up real early, and I would wake up real early while it was still dark and go to his little shack that was just like four wood walls and a tin roof, you know, and a dirt floor. And he would make me breakfast and a little open fire in his place and tell me stories.
It's
old, like 75-year-old Mexican night watchman, like in 1973 or 4 or something like that.
That sounds like a John Steinbeck novel or something.
yeah, totally. it's cool. You know, there's cool characters. There's something about being. Did you speak Spanish when you went there?
Sí, señor.
Qué bueno.
I do. It took me a couple years. My first year or two, it took me a while. I got made fun of. I was a gringo. But then finally, ahora puedo hablar poquito con acento.
Yeah, that's good, though. Are you Jewish?
Yes. I mean, I don't practice anything in particular, but by inheritance, yes.
Did you grow up in, like, how Jewish was your family?
I didn't grow up in the synagogue or anything. It was on my dad's side. He grew up in the synagogue and all that. And my grandma, I grew up doing Hanukkah, but also Christmas, just because my mom grew up on the other side of things. So I celebrate Hanukkah, Christmas, Ramadan, Kwanzaa. Like, since we were in Singapore, we were helping celebrating with all of our Muslim friends out there, you know? So just sort of, I've always incorporated from all the different religions, but by inheritance, I grew up Jewish.
Right. There was no, you don't come from the kind of family that pressured your dad to pressure your mom to convert or anything like that so that you would be Jewish?
No, I was so lucky, man. My parents, when I was a kid, I remember being a young kid and my mom and my dad were like, you know, because people in school would talk about religion stuff. And I remember I came home one day and some kid said, oh, your name is Jewish, so you're going to burn in hell. And I didn't know what that meant. So I went home and I was like, what does burn in hell mean? And what is Jewish? And they're like, okay, well, let's have a talk about this. They're like, here's what we believe, which is, you know, this. They're like, you can believe whatever you want. And we'll, if you want to do a church, you could do that. If you want to do a synagogue or, you know, whatever. And so I was like, okay, I think I'm just going to chill because this whole hell thing sounds scary and I just don't really want to talk about it. So I avoided it. Growing up, and now I have through recovery, I have my own conception of what all that stuff is, and I believe that I experienced a living hell on earth. So I'm literally in heaven right now talking to you.
Yeah,
it's cool.
I want to feel like you do, man. You're in a good headspace.
Thank you, man. I worked hard to get here, bro.
Yeah, it must have taken some work. So, how did you find music? You said you had a band when you were like 14.
Yeah. You know, I first found music, I remember at age 4, I was in kindergarten and I was listening to the cassette tape in the corner of the room. They had Beatles cassette tapes and I didn't know, but I was dancing. I had stood up and I knocked over the chair behind me and I was knocking chairs over. I had no idea. So the teacher came over, took the headphones off and whispered. She's like, you have to calm down a little bit. And like, show me, I had knocked the chair over. I had no idea. I'd been completely taken over like a out of body experience, and that was when I knew. I was like, something's up with those headphones and that song in it. So that was what really took me over. And then the first time I played with friends, I was 10 in Singapore, and it was just a keyboard and like a, you know, bongo, and I was like, we started jamming and my friends, and after we did the same thing over and over and started writing lyrics to it, and they wanted to stop, but I made them keep doing it for like another hour. And I was like, no, do it right here like this. And that was the first time it ever happened. Like, I just became a producer and a teacher in that moment. And it just, it never stopped.
Wow.
It's so weird. It was so weird. It was like, this was my calling. Like, it just, it came into me. And so I just knew that I had to study music because I didn't know anything about it. So I went and studied music in school and got my jazz degree and stuff. Not because I like jazz.
Where in school? Where'd you go to school?
I went to University of Oregon.
Okay. Is that what took you up to Oregon?
Yeah. Well, I went back to Oregon. See, my parents lived in Oregon after San Jose, from age 1 to 5, we were in Oregon. And then that's where my dad's company was. And then we went and we came back to Oregon at age 16, just because his company was there. I mean, it was in Mexico, it was based in Switzerland and Singapore, but there was a headquarters in Portland. So that's why we kept coming back there. And I went to school there because it was close, you know, Eugene was close to where I went to high school in Portland.
Okay. So yeah. So you went up there and you studied jazz? Did you get a degree?
Yeah, I got a degree in jazz, yeah, because I didn't even know you could study jazz, but my parents were so kind and they were willing to help me get a further degree. So they're like, what would you like to study? And I'm like, well, I don't really like to do anything except for music. I'd rather just play music than go study. And they're like, well, you could study music. And I was like, well, you could do that? I remember I said that. I was like 18. I was like, oh, you could do that? And they're like, yeah, we'll help you, you know? And so I was just so lucky I got to go study music. I didn't even like jazz at that time. Like, I love it now, you know what I mean? But I didn't want to do classical. I knew that. And I'd studied classical and it was really hard. And I just was like, I don't have enough hours in the day to practice classical. So, and jazz got me doing 10 hours a day anyway. So I was like, I don't have 20 hours to practice today.
So you didn't like jazz, but you got into, how did you connect with jazz?
You know, I connected it to a guitar player named Tal Farlow. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
He was a 1950s bebop guitar player. And I got his signature model guitar. They're only 250 made in the 50s. I got the reissue made in 1992 because I didn't have 40 grand. But just an ES-135, beautiful guitar. And I found out that I loved this guy's guitar playing so much. And so I spent 5 years, because the first year I failed the audition. I didn't know how to read music. I could play it, you know, but the biggest part of the audition was reading it. So I get up to read it and they're like, no, dude. So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do the music program because I won't do anything else. So I spent the entire year doing, just getting ready to read. And then I came back a year later and I was like, can we try again? They're like, you waited a year. And so then I did the 4-year program and I was the only one who actually started and finished it, because everyone else was like, dude, the 7 other dudes I started with were like, dude, I want a life. And my life became guitar. And then the substance use, which was what helps me practice 10 hours a day.
Right. What was the substance that was helping you practice 10 hours a day? Like Adderall or some shit?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Everything. I wanted to come up, wanted to come down. But yeah, there was a lot of that, particularly around in college. And it was also in the music school, there were a lot of people who just, you know, were doing that to practice. And in school in general, but it was accepted. I didn't know it wasn't normal to me and my friends. It was just what we did. Yeah. And then I started hanging out with other people and realized that, well, this isn't normal.
Right. Right. So you didn't go the way of like Pat Metheny or Al Di Meola or any of those Alan Holdsworth, Frank Gambale, all those jazz guitarists.
Oh, I love those guys so much. When you say those names, when you say Frank and when you say Pat, I just think about how he holds the pick and how beautiful he plays the harp, that guitar and that his harmonics. And no, I love all of those guys. I just got obsessed with this one guy, Tal Farlow, because he played really fast and he played bebop lines and he really influenced the big guys like Joe Pass and Frank Gambale. I want to send you my favorite record of Tal. The one that changed my life is called The Swinging Guitar of Tal Farlow.
Okay.
I don't know what it is about that record, but it caused me to want to study jazz in school. And I still love jazz, but I really just love Tal and Miles Davis.
Oh yeah. Miles, unbelievable, man.
Yeah, dude. Just I kind of blew and Bitches Brew were just alternate on the record player here.
So you're cool with like the you're cool with the fusion, Miles.
Oh man, fusion, that's my thing. Like the only thing that's been constant about this band has been our identity crisis in music. You know, we put out I think 5 or 6 records under Water Tower Bucket Boys, and our first record was a traditional square dance, and it was Water Tower String Band. It was only square dance. Our second record, we became the Bucket Boys. It was traditional bluegrass. Then we started writing our own songs at the next album, and then we started incorporating indie and jazz, and so it's just always evolving, I guess. It's just the identity crisis is the only constant with music specifically. Just love all the styles.
Right, but it seems like you've been able to garner an audience with that. Like in some ways, like a manager or a label or something would be like, man, find a fucking thing and do it. You know what I mean? Like I've had people say that to me before, you know? Like, I mean, I'm a musician as well. And I guess I've gotten the sit down like, hey, buddy, the White Album isn't the greatest album simply because it has no focus and it's a disastrous stylistic mess. And I would be like, Yeah, but they're expressing themselves whatever the fuck they want to. And that's how I do it, you know?
Yes, yes. And I think for many years I was going through that. But because I've been so committed to being able to channel all of the different styles that I'm so in love with, I think that it's starting to make sense to people. And part of it is that this busking thing that we were doing made it so I was always analyzing what car wanted what song, right? So in Hollywood, there's a lot of Armenians because the town is called Little Armenia. That's actually Hollywood's name because they were here first. And so a lot of Armenians will come up and I'll play the Armenian national anthem for them. And then next person would be maybe a Mexican. I'll play La Cucaracha or the Mexican hat dance. And then maybe we'll have like a white lady in her car. And so I'll give her some violin. And then we'll have like a dude in his truck. So I'll give him Devil Went Down to Georgia. And this is all within 20 seconds, right? So I'm switching songs and styles between each car just to try to get a dollar out of them. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And the other thing is I'm maintaining conversations with them. So I have conversations across four lanes of traffic, across four styles of music while I'm taking money. So that's what prepared me for this moment, which I could have never realized. But being during COVID, talking to four different screens, because we'll go live with Twitch and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. And so talking to all the comments on our, see, like we have a bit of a control center here, right? So,
oh, yeah.
So this is how we're able to communicate with all of our different peeps while we're playing and take their temperature and stuff. But I never could have realized that what I was doing on the street, it would prepare me perfectly for this moment when I had to talk to 500 different people, you know, or five different people at once who want different songs and blend it all into one. I don't know, you know.
Right. And seems like then stylistically with the ability to be busking like that, then what you're doing online with a live stream doesn't come off weird or disingenuous or kind of boring. You know what I mean?
I mean, I suppose it's just so natural, I guess, for me. It just became so natural when we started going live. I guess it just, yeah, it's not disingenuous. Yeah, I guess it doesn't come off disingenuous just because it's like, I think at first people are like, what is this dude talking about? And they're like, whoa, he's like in conversations with everyone in the comments while he's singing. It's like kind of funny. It's fun.
So you guys were slated to be on tour for the whole year. Did you have it all booked?
We had a lot of stuff booked. So far we haven't, there's some September dates that are still on. But I'm not sure, they're in Oregon, but I have a feeling they'll be canceled. But yes, we were going to be on tour right now and all those dates were canceled. But this has been so much cooler, honestly. We just can't wait to get out on the road now because we have so many friends. Like it's crazy. Like this whole, it's so many new friends that we've made in the last 2 months that we can't wait to go out and meet because it feels like they're our family now. Like it's different. It's like music is now changed because of COVID. Like this thing has changed everything forever because now we're in a relationship with all of our fans to where it feels like they're our best friends. And there couldn't have ever been something that brought us together like this before.
That's interesting, man. That I haven't heard that from anybody yet. And I'm talking to people all the time. Like my circle of friends is all musicians. Everyone's like, oh man, this fucking sucks. It's like, you know, it's interesting. It's good to hear like of somebody, like there's got to be some way. I actually moderated a couple of panels throughout this thing for the Austin Music Foundation with a bunch of different managers about pivoting your, like, you know, everyone, you were planning on putting out a record. You were planning on going on tour. That ended. Now, you got to figure out how you're going to keep the ball rolling.
Right.
And it seems like you kept it rolling in like a way that you found is even growing your audience.
Dude, we could have never gotten so big if this hadn't happened, as big as we are now. I mean, we'd already been a 15-year institution, you know, like a very small band, but like we had, we've doubled in size essentially in the last 2 months because of the dedication that we found, like of our fans. Cause what we found is that since we're dedicated to playing all day, if we went out and found people who wanted to have our music all day, and created a relationship with them and just became friends with these people, that they're devoted to us just like we're devoted to them. When we show up at 12, the same 100 people are showing up and bringing their friends and tipping us and buying our CD and telling us that they love our music and we love them. And it's absolutely crazy. And I would love to have you come on because you're already part of the family because Vanessa's a big part of our family. And I just, it would be cool if you came on sometime.
What's Vanessa's last name?
Meyer, M-E-I-E-R.
M-E-Y?
M-E-I.
Oh, that's weird.
Okay. E-R.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, she felt it enough to tell some dude that she's a fan of his show, you know, hey, you should talk to these guys, you know?
Oh, that's so sweet. I just assumed y'all knew each other from, like, back in the day or something.
I think we did. I, you know, man, sometimes, I mean, you know this from touring, your life becomes this blur of people, and if they're not standing in the exact same place where you had whatever conversation you had, it's very hard to place them again. You know what I mean?
Of course. Of course. Dude, and I wanted to go back before I forget what you said about taking this situation. I had read a book called Epictetus, this guy who wrote this stuff on a tablet back in like 400 AD or something. And it's like the foundation of these modern principles of Stoicism. And I read it right before Corona hit. And something that he said in there stuck with me. He said, there's an advantage in every situation if you choose to see it. And that changed my life. I know that sounds simple, but so when Corona hit, the first thing I thought was, how do I use this to my advantage? That was just like all I could think. And so it was just this book that, like, I don't know, something about the way that resonated with me. Cause the other thing was I had so many unfortunate events not only happened to me, but that I brought on myself for so many years that I existed in a state of constant survival and adrenaline. So every day to me is survival. And I think when this hit, it just was like, well, where's the advantage? You know, the advantage is I haven't wanted to be online for years. That's why I stand on the side of the road and play fiddle, because I don't want to deal with online stuff. I want to meet fans one by one by one. But now I'm stuck inside and I can't do it. So I got to go meet them one by one online. So I just did an about face and went straight into the place I didn't want to go, which was here.
Yeah. How much live streaming do you think you'll do? I'm not going to say if, because that bums me out too hard, but when things go back to normal.
Yeah. I was thinking about that just before we were talking, as I was laying in bed. I was like, I don't think I could ever stop doing this again. This 12 to 5 thing. I'm like, maybe we could, like, you know, when things go back to normal,
if you're going, like, to be like in the back of the van while you're going to your next gig.
That's what I was like, dude, wherever we are for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to be there at 12 and 5 now that we created this. Like, this is what I was born to do. So I don't ever see this changing. Like, on my deathbed, I'm going to be there playing fiddle as I die to these people. I'm crazy, bro. The thing is, I'm addicted to music, and I'm addicted to healing, and I'm addicted to the love that it creates. And that was what I was meant to be addicted to.
I can tell you there's a lot worse things to be addicted to. That's for sure.
What, I'm curious about your music. I didn't even realize. So hopefully maybe you could send me some links. I should have checked before, but I really want to go listen and watch your videos and everything.
It's bluegrass mixed with punk and indie and noise music. No, I'm joking.
Bluegrass. Yeah. I was like, wait.
I do exactly what you do.
Awesome.
No, it's more like power pop, like, you know, like a guy that listened to too much Beatles and Cheap Trick and T-Rex and Bowie and, you know.
Oh, dude. So what's your favorite Beatles record? Is it the White Album?
No, my favorite Beatles record is Magical Mystery Tour, because it's so weird. Wow. And to me, dude, like, all of the things that the Beatles are, like the things that make them the Beatles-esque band, mm-hmm. is in that record.
Wow. It totally is. And that's funny you say that, because the first CD compact disc I ever bought in Singapore in 1995 was Magical Mystery Tour with my allowance money. And my parents took me out and I was like, I'm going to get a CD now, because I had a Walkman, a Discman. And yeah, dude, Magical Mystery Tour is my favorite too.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And yeah, Goo Goo Gajoo, man.
Well,
jeez.
It also is so underrated and kind of viewed as like not their, by far not their best, because it's kind of a mess. It's made up of some singles that had come out. They just threw them on there. But still, like, to me, it's like as a piece of work, it's very cohesive and it's very psychedelic. Like, to me, it's 100 times more psychedelic than like Sgt. Pepper or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah.
And it doesn't feel as overworked as Sgt. Pepper. That's the thing about Sgt. Pepper, is that it feels like it was trying too hard.
I know what you mean. Like, you know, I mean, what I mean? Obviously, I grew up on Sgt. Pepper because my mom would play that like when I was 5, and she danced me around to all that. But like, yeah, but So that kind of introduced me to it. And I know what you mean. It had that, it almost, it scared me at the end. A Day in the Life was intense. I remember acting that out. Like, I remember acting that out for my friends in Singapore, that whole, the ending part of Day in the Life when they had, you know, and just like, woke up, got out of bed, dragged a comb across my head, just doing all that stuff. But being a kid doing that, but yes, really understanding music deeper with Magical Mystery Tour about 5 years later at the age of 10 or 11, is exactly what you're saying. Just, it just really encompasses that what they were doing.
Man, I don't recommend this, but if you're going, if you're listening,
hey, who's up? And it's Tommy, Johnny, Tommy.
Morning, Tommy. How you doing, Johnny, buddy?
Comfort? Just Johnny Goody. We're live on this radio show right now. So you were saying if you recommend, you don't recommend what? What were you saying?
I don't recommend that people take the LSD, but if you're going to take it and you have headphones and access to Magical Mystery Tour, this is a fabulous experience.
He's not lying. It's true.
Yeah. I don't do that stuff anymore. I'm 51, and there's like a point where you're like, I don't have 10 hours to fucking be freaking out, because I'm already freaking out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that weird thing. I have a really close friend that is an amazing comedian, this guy Lucas Melendez, and he has this bit about horror movies and how horror movies only work when you're a kid with these monsters, because as you get older, the real fear of life starts setting in, but that doesn't make for an interesting movie. Like, will I have sufficient insurance coverage when I turn 50? Like, those kind of things that are like the things that scare you. So I'm curious, how did you come across punk rock music? Was there a person that played you a...
Yeah, you know, I first came across punk rock music playing guitar. Basically, I would say hearing, you know, bands like Blink 182 and Offspring and Rancid. Really, Rancid are probably my biggest influences, and Tim. But I heard Operation Ivy do Bombshell. And I heard some Operation Ivy songs and some Rancid songs in high school by some older kids. Yeah, some older kids in high school. When I was I started skateboarding, and just through skateboarding,
okay, yeah,
punk rock,
yeah,
Black Flag, you know, and that's why we got Ron Reyes, because Ron Reyes inspired me to write my first song.
Wow.
And so that's why I wanted him to sing the last song on the new record, just have my hero be able to sing it. And when I asked him to sing it, he's like, dude, I've never tried. This is the first time I tried singing. So it was really cool. But, well, I got sidetracked. What was the question that you just asked?
How you found punk rock. But you told
punk
me.
Punk rock, right. Yeah. Basically, some skateboarding, the older kids in high school in Mexico and in Singapore, and Rancid. Just the bass lines. I loved the Matt Freeman's bass lines, and I loved the way that Tim would write songs that were pop songs, but they were covered in his grit. And one of my dreams was to work. I was like, one day when I grow up, I just want to work with Tim. And it's really cool, because a year ago we got to co-produce a record together for a client of mine who I produced, Rosie Nolan, and got to go to Tim's studio and just literally sit there and work on this music together. And I couldn't even believe it. And then so Tommy and I got to go play music with him recently too. And it's just been really fun. He's such a musical dude, and he's really into this old timey bluegrass music as well. And he's learning. So I've been teaching him, giving him some guitar lessons too.
Yeah. That's awesome. So do you do that for work?
Yeah, we both do a lot of teaching. So yeah, we also do lessons, and that a lot of private students and stuff. And that's been one thing here. This whole Skype and Zoom thing, it's been great.
Yeah.
So yeah, we love teaching.
I'm in a band with a couple of guys that also do some teaching, and they were both saying that it can be kind of hard, because I guess they also have younger students too. The younger students can sidetracked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, the whole thing with the younger students is like, it's just about, I think of it as a big trick. I'm just there to trick them into having a good time with me. So like, you know what I mean? Like when I'm doing the lessons with the kids, I'm not really the teacher. I'm just like the kind of like goofy dude with the instrument, you know, and I'm just sort of guiding their experience on it. That's how I look at it. And then we usually have fun.
You can't try and be like too scholarly when you're teaching a kid.
Hey, Tommy, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Does Kenny ever wake up like all pissed off, kicking shit? around the house? It's
well,
because this guy's he's got a level of positivity that is freaking me out. Like, I want to know what it is.
It's so funny that you say that. You didn't tell him anything?
No.
I don't really see it that much. I've seen it sometimes where he's gotten mad at certain people, but he actually is funny. Just like a few days ago, he was like, dude, sorry. Like, I get kind of edgy in the morning. And like,
it's true. Sometimes I get edgy in the morning.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, but yeah, he'll maybe sometimes he gets like pissed at certain people depending on what they do. But I don't know. I mean,
it's rare.
Chill for the most part.
I got that. I was just kind of fucking with you. This is a real pleasure getting to talk to you and getting to know you guys.
You too, man. This has been so fun. I'm glad that Tommy woke up too. This is like perfect.
Yeah, man. Nice to have you up. You know, I know about Ron because I'm not a big, I only kind of know punk rock through like retroactively. Because like when I was growing up, those bands were active. I'm assuming, how old are you guys? How old are you, Kenny?
I'm 33. He's 24.
Yeah, so I'm a lot older than you guys. I'm 51. But like when I was a kid and those bands were actually happening, like I was scared of the kids that listened to the music. Same thing like when the thrash bands came out, like Metallica and like Slayer and all that kind of stuff. Those guys seemed too intense, like they were going to kick my ass or something. So I always like stayed away from it. But I ended up interviewing a few years ago. Do you know who Penelope Spheeris is? She did that Decline of Western Civilization documentary series.
Oh, yes, I know exactly. Yes, I've seen them.
And so kind of fell in love with the Germs from the first install, volume one.
Volume one, yes. Yeah. That was where I fell in love with the Germs too, just watching Darby talk and see Don play and just hear them and just to see what they're, the weird kitchen scene, and they're like trying to pretend like maybe he's not gay and just like, oh, yeah. It's just so cool.
Yeah. Let me ask you this about LA. Like, what's the scene like there for you guys? Like, what's your scene there?
It's funny, man, because people talk about the scene in LA a lot of time. LA is so crazy and so big, man. Like, there's a lot of scenes. We came here to create our own scene. So our scene, bro, like, is the street and like in this house. Like, that's so funny.
That's the water tower scene.
We have a water, like, there's no other, like, we have a water, we call it water tower life. It's a hashtag. We have 1,000 of these pics and they're hashtag water tower life.
Oh, awesome.
And And the thing is, we shred through them. Like, after about 15 minutes, we shred one. So that's why we have 1,000. So as soon as we're done, they're shreddy picks. And we send them out to our fans who make them into shreddy pick things and earrings. And they sell them to each other. It's really cool.
That is
but
awesome,
what I'm trying
man.
To say is our scene is just us. It's crazy.
Yeah.
There are music scenes too, though. I mean,
but we don't. We're not a part of them.
It's just like, you know, no, we are a part of some of them, I guess. You know, like, we'll hang out with the people in the old time scene.
Yeah, no, we have 99%
friends. 99% of our time is spent on the street scene or on the online scene.
Right, right.
Well, that's the thing is, like, we get asked to play shows all the time in LA, but, like, we won't play shows because in LA there's not many paid shows, and we can't afford to go pay to play. And LA is a pay to play place. And even if they're saying, oh, you don't have to pay to play, even if it's a free show, we still have to pay the gas to get there, the guys to play. So we would always rather go spend that time on the off ramp where the cars are, because at the cars we're guaranteed hundreds of people, hundreds of dollars and hundreds of fans. Whereas at a show, nobody might show up except for the angry bouncer, bartender and light guy who want money from you. So we're done playing venues. We play on the street.
Yeah.
But just in LA, I mean, you play venues in other places.
Oh yeah, we play venues. If a venue, if we don't have to pay a venue, we'll play there.
There's venues that pay, and you know, the thing is that like in LA, it's, you know, it's tough to have a gig every night that pays. You know, most musicians are gigging. You know, like there's some musicians who've been doing it a long time that have lots of gigs all week. Maybe, but. As far as getting a regular gig where you get to perform for people and get paid for that, you know, busking is just, you know, just different. You know, like before I met Kenny, I before the virus happened, you know, I was doing paid gigs too, you know, with Water Tower and then also with my own band. But it wasn't as much money per month as going out on the street and busking 8 hours a day. So like that turned into my day job, you know, because before it was like I was doing the gigs at night and then I'd be hustling, trying to do, you know, whatever lessons or whatever kind of other job, you know, I was like painting houses or like digging up lawns and stuff. Just to make ends meet. And then once I found that Kenny was doing all the busking stuff, I was like, screw all that. Like, I just want to go out and play music.
He started busking hardcore that's about 6 months ago and did a lot of 10-hour days on the banjo. So he's become a ripper in just 6 months.
That's one way. I mean, going back to the Beatles, like the reason why they were so fucking great when they made that first record with the Beatles, and it's, you know, four dudes playing in a room and kicking ass, it's because they played 10 hours a day in fucking Hamburg for a year, you know?
Exactly.
They put in the 10,000 hours, so to speak.
And that's what we're trying to do on the street here. We're trying to do our Hamburg out on the street here and now with y'all.
Yeah, it's probably a lot. I don't know how much safer the streets of L.A. What part of L.A. do you live in?
Echo Park. We're basically like right downtown, kind of.
Nice.
Right downtown's that way, and the lake's right over there, about 5-minute walk, and our busking spot's right past the lake, and it's just, it's a little slice of heaven what we have here. You know, we get to live off the fat of the land. We wake up, we used to go walk out to the light and play fiddle and come back and hang out, and now we're just doing it online, but we're talking about going back to busking any day now, because it seems like everything's starting to go a little bit, slowly by slow, little by little, you know?
Yeah. Where do you stand with do you have any opinion on what's been happening, how this has been handled by our authorities?
Well, yeah, I just love that meme where it shows like Japan has like however many dead, and on January 20th they got the news that it was coming, and then we got the news on January 20th, but you know, we had 100,000 dead. So
yeah,
I mean, it's just a bummer basically, but hey, you know, that's kind of funny ultimately. Like, the thing is, I don't pay too much attention. I hear what's going on, but I'm so involved in like just loving music that I can't even hear what the people are talking about sometimes.
Good, because at least this week it's kind of accelerated into complete and total madness. So don't listen to what anyone has to say. It's actually gotten weirder.
Has it? Wow. Yeah. I can't even imagine. I'm glad I don't know what you're talking about.
Good. Are you how do you guys know Jesse Dayton? Do you know him? Or I saw you guys retweeted something about him, like a Rolling Stone article about him.
Just he's love a good his friend music. Of mine. He's a good friend of yours?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Just love his music and saw that we have I just checked his music. I think I saw that you had tweeted him. I just checked, it went through. We have mutual friends, you know, Jamie Wyatt and I really love
He his is music. Literally friends with everybody.
Just everyone.
It's pretty fucking insane. Like when Billy Zoom was sick. Uh-huh. He played guitar for X.
What?
When Billy Zoom got sick a few years ago and couldn't play. Everywhere. Like, he played on a Waylon Jennings record when he was like 19 or something. He's made a movie, like a horror movie. He directed and wrote a horror movie. Did you ever see that Woody Allen movie Zelig?
No, I didn't. Where he's just, I know
it's kind of like this Forrest Gump kind of guy that just happened to be in history at all these different places. Like, Jesse's like the little guy in the background in everything that happened, and like from punk rock to country music and everything in between.
He was just there for all of it. I love that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Is there anything I'm missing, man? So people can find you guys. You do Noon on Facebook?
Yeah, we do Noon on Facebook, and then we do 5 on Twitch. And we used to do 5 on Facebook, but we're moving everyone to Twitch. Have you ever done Twitch before?
No.
We're giving anyone who moves on to Twitch with us gets a free surprise. We send them something. Some people have been getting a CD. Some people get a water tower comb. Some people get a water tower toothbrush. But since thank you for having us on the show, and I want to get your address so I can send you the water tower care package. But
yeah, man.
If you decide to join us on Twitch, we'll send you more free swag, just because we know it's another app. But it's a lot more fun than Facebook. It's just like a TV show of water tower where you can chat with us. It's simple. But 12 at Facebook, 5 at Twitch, and then we do Instagram to say goodbye to everyone.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, man. It's been great meeting you. Also, nice meeting you, Tommy. Tommy, what's your last name, man?
Drinkard. So Yes, it's like Drink Hard with no H.
That's right. His band name too, Drinkard. That's his band name, Drinkard.
Okay, what kind of music does Drinkard play?
It's a little more. It's kind of like full band with, you know, drums and bass, and it's got like a, you know, I'd say it's like alt country fusion kind of mix. Sometimes it mixes with a lot of different styles like reggae-ish or, you know, bluesy kind of stuff. But yeah, I would just call it like alt country. It's similar to people like Jason Isbell or, you know, Blackberry Smoke, that kind of stuff.
I don't know Blackberry Smoke, but I do know Jason Isbell.
Yeah, that's like a comparison that I've gotten from a few people. And also I know from like just marketing the music that's, you know, like when you put the interest in, like his crowd tend to respond to us like better than other crowds.
Cool. Cool. Drinkard, man. I'll keep an eye out for it.
One last thing I want to say, because I want to say owl out to you, which means it's our way of saying goodbye, because when we say goodbye to our people, we have an owl lamp over here. See this thing right here?
Yeah.
This is the owl lamp. So the reason we go on Instagram is because when we say bye to our people, it's like, no, you hang up. No, you hang up. So the way we have to do it, because otherwise nobody wants to hang up, we have to just be like, all right, everybody, owl out, right? So, and the last thing is that this morning we woke up and one of the owls in our team, one of the people who's listening to us, made a giant boombox that's shaped like an owl.
Oh, that's
just
awesome.
For listening to our music out of. I'm going to send you a picture of it, but it's crazy. Like, there's so much dedication, and it brought a tear to my eye to see this morning, that they mean, the owl means so much to them. They're making like stereos out of it. It's crazy.
Unbelievable, man. Well, congratulations, man. So great talking to you, man. We should stay in touch. You guys come back through. I'd love to hang out with you, check you guys out.
Let's hang out.
Yeah, have a taco.
Let's hang out when we come to Austin. We're planning to come to Austin. As soon as we have the go-ahead to leave here, we will come see you.
All right.
All right, man.
All right, man. Well, you guys have a great day. See you, Tommy. Nice to meet you, Kenny. Great talking to you, man.
You too, buddy.
Have a good
one,
pal.
Bye-bye.
Kenny Feinstein with special guest Tommy Dunkard. They are the band Water Tower. Their brand new album, Fly Around, is available now everywhere, wherever you stream and download your jams. Find them at watertowerband.com. Find them every single day playing free concerts online. They are at playing on Facebook at noon and on Twitch at 5. Kenny plays every day. That's what he does. I love that. Love talking to him. What a great outlook. Guys, I want to let you know that this conversation, once again, was done before Memorial Day. So that's why we're just kind of all happy-go-lucky about everything. Anyway, great talking to Kenny. Great talking to Tommy. Check out Water Tower. Thank you guys for listening to the show. When you're out there checking out watertowerband.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. New shows all the time. Dropping so many shows this week, every day. Every day, baby. How did I get here? I want to thank Kenny and Tommy for chatting with me. And let's hear the rest of their song, Fly Around, from their brand new album, Fly Around. Water Tower. Let's get down.
Out on my fire, fly around my pretty little miss, fly around my daisy, fly around my pretty little miss, you almost drive me crazy.